Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, December 27th, 2022. Coming up this hour.
Stocks in China gain as the country continues to roll back COVID measures.
That's helping to lift U.S. futures as we close out the last trading week of the year.
And President Biden declares an emergency in the state of New York because of the winter storm.
New York GOP Representative-elect Santos admits he lied about his job experience. Plus, Democrats call Texas Governor Abbott's actions on migrants a dangerous stunt. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer in sports. Red Hot Nets made it 9 wins in a row with a win in Cleveland. Mike White is back as the Jets' starting quarterback.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning, I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures are on the rise this morning. And we check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 27 points or 0.7%. Dow futures up 0.6% or 211 points. And NASDAQ futures up 0.6% or 70 points. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 3.74%. The yield on the 2-year at 4.33%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.6% or 49 cents at $80.05 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.7% or $11.70 at $18.15.80 an ounce. The euro 1.0652 against the dollar. The yen 133.19. John.
And Karen, as we wait for stocks to begin trading here in the U.S. on this shortened trading week, equities in Asia are higher. China continues to roll back COVID measures, and that is boosting sentiment in the region. Let's get the recap from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis in Hong Kong.
Asian stocks powered higher on the China news of ditching quarantine rules. Travel and consumer goods stocks jumped. It was a risk-on day with U.S. and European equity futures also higher and the dollar lower. Investors also embraced the cooling of a key inflation measure in the United States. Oil and gold also bounced. Indexes of U.S., Asian, and global stocks still remain down about 20% this year. It's the worst annual performance since 2008. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. Well, in geopolitical news, U.S.-China tensions are in focus again. The U.S. is criticizing Beijing's military drills near Taiwan this week. The National Security Council called the exercises provocative and said it'll continue to help Taiwan defend itself. Last week, U.S. lawmakers agreed to a spending bill that included $2 billion in weapons funding for Taiwan.
And back here in New York, Karen, nasty bout of winter weather has resulted in 28 deaths and crippled parts of the state. And now President Biden has approved a disaster declaration in New York. Let's get the story this morning from Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
The Buffalo area got at least 4 feet of snow, and more is expected today. New York Governor Kathy Hochul.
We have been through a lot of wars together, and this blizzard is the one for the ages. Certainly it is the blizzard of the century.
Those who died around Buffalo were found in cars, homes, and snowbanks. Some died while shoveling snow. Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown says they are also dealing with power outages and lack of heat.
I myself and my family were without power. I can tell you at one point, the temperature in our home got down to about 40 degrees. It was very uncomfortable. We had to layer up.
Mayor Brown says some people have been without power since Friday. In New York, Michael Barr, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Michael, thank you. Well, the bad weather across the country is also hitting air travel hard, and we get that part of the story live with Bloomberg's Steve Rappaport. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Karen and John. Airlines are scrambling to catch up after a winter storm canceled thousands of flights during the Christmas travel rush. The flight tracking website FlightAware shows more than 2,800 flights grounded today. Southwest was the worst hit yesterday, accounting for nearly 75% of the cancellations nationwide. Southwest Senior Director Jim McVeigh.
As the storm continued to sweep across the country, the cancellations just compiled one after another. And as a result, we end up with flight crews and airplanes that are out of place and not in the cities that they need to be in to continue to run our operations.
McVeigh says the airline is doing everything it can to right the current challenges. Southwest stock is down about 3% in pre-market trading. Live in New York, I'm Steve Rappaport, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Steve, thanks. And turning back to the markets, we're closing out the last trading week of a dismal year for equities. S&P 500 is down more than than 19% in 2022. Harder hit has been the tech-heavy NASDAQ, which has lost a third of its value. Jonathan Golub is the chief U.S. equity strategist at Credit Suisse.
I think that this problem that we've had in tech is not a sentiment problem. It's an earnings problem, and it doesn't last for 3 or 4 quarters. It lasts for 6 or 8 quarters. And a lot of these big tech companies that 2 or 3 years ago we said they have moats, they're impenetrable, and we talked in those terms, a lot of those companies are getting closer to total addressable market, whether that's in handsets or advertising or other things like that.
Jonathan Golub at Credit Suisse thinks the resilient consumer will keep the U.S. out of recession.
Well, John, once a pandemic darling, Peloton disappointed investors last month with a holiday forecast that missed estimates. Now it has a plan to help recoup some of those losses. We get the details from Bloomberg's Erica Herskowitz.
Peloton released a statement Monday saying it will begin offering refurbished bikes at discounts of up to $500 below new model prices. The price tag on a certified refurbished model will range from $1,145 to $1,995. That's $300 to $500 below current prices. The refurbished bikes come with the same 12-month limited warranty as the new ones and include delivery and setup. The company's all-access membership is sold separately. Shares of Peloton are down 75% this year. Erica Herskowitz, Bloomberg Radio.
Yeah, thanks, Erica. Shares of AMC Entertainment, they're continuing their slide this morning. They are down another 7% after falling 17% on Thursday and Friday. The company is proposing to convert preferred equity units into common shares, along with a 10-to-1 reverse stock split.
Well, the price of oil also on the rise this morning, John. China has taken more steps to unwind its COVID-zero policy, which could increase demand. Straight ahead, we have your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports, and this is Bloomberg.
The Bloomberg weather for today, becoming partly sunny, the high temperature topping out at about 35 degrees. Time now for a look at some of the other stories making news in New York and around the world. And for that, we're joined by Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, John. Representative-elect George Santos of New York admitted that he lied about his job experience and college education during his successful campaign for a seat in the U.S. House. In an interview with the New York Post and WABC Radio, the Long Island Republican said, "My sins here are embellishing my resume. I'm sorry."
A lot of people overstate in their resumes or twist a little bit or ingratiate themselves. I'm not saying I'm not guilty of that. I'm just saying I've done so much good work in my career.
The New York Times raised questions last week about the life story that Santos had presented during his campaign, including that he had worked for Citigroup and Goldman Sachs. Neither company could find any records verifying that. In Connecticut, a 22-year veteran of the North Haven Fire Department has died from injuries he sustained while working a blaze at a four-family home. The department identified the firefighter as 46-year-old Matthias Wirtz. The Connecticut State Police are investigating the cause of the blaze, which displaced 13 residents on Christmas night. The Biden administration is accusing Texas Governor Greg Abbott of endangering lives, all in the name of politics. Three buses of migrants traveled from Texas and were left in the bitter cold outside Vice President Kamala Harris's official residence. Ukraine's foreign minister has said that his nation wants a summit to end the war, but he doesn't anticipate Russia taking part. Dmytro Kuleba says that his government wants a peace summit within 2 months at the United Nations with Secretary General Antonio Guterres as mediator.
Every war ends as a result of the actions taken at the battlefield and at the negotiating table. But the balance of what will be won on the battlefield and what will be won at the table, it remains to be seen.
Foreign Minister Kuleba also told the Associated Press that Russia must face a war crimes tribunal. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. And it's now 5:08 on Wall Street. Time for the sports report, being brought to you by your Tri-State Audi dealer. And good morning, John Stashower.
Good morning, John. The Jets have four quarterbacks. They've used all four. They started three. Zach Wilson's gone from first string down to third, then up to second, back to first. Now he's back to third string, or maybe fourth, but he'll be inactive for the Jets Sunday in Seattle. Mike White has recovered from his injured ribs. He'll start with Joe Flacco, the backup. Jets coach Robert Saleh asked where things stand with Wilson.
I still think he's got a future here. I still think he's going to be a really good quarterback. He needs time to just kind of sit back and continue the development that we're trying to re-kickstart, if you will, after the New England game. But still have him in our future and in our plans.
This runs contrary to a report on Fox that the Jets have decided to move on from Wilson after this season. The Colts, with their third different starting QB and one-time Super Bowl hero Nick Foles, threw three interceptions. The Chargers won 20-3. That clinches an AFC wild card for the Chargers. So there's one AFC spot remaining, with Miami leading the Jets, Patriots, and Steelers by one game. Dolphins QB Tua Tagovailoa is in concussion protocol, as he was earlier this season. The Giants were watching last night. They host Indianapolis on Sunday. A Giants win, and they're in the playoffs. Denver, 4-11, just lost by 37. The Broncos fired coach Nathaniel Hackett. Ninth straight win for the Red Hot Nets. Both Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving scored 32 in a 125-117 win at Cleveland that has the Nets only two games out of first place in the East. Knicks look down a three-game losing streak tonight. They're in Dallas. The Rangers home for Washington. The Islanders host Pittsburgh, and Seton Hall is a Big East game at Marquette. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks a lot, John. And the Bloomberg Sports Report brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information. Ahead of the market open on Wall Street, Dow futures right now, they're up 214 points, a rise of about 0.7%. S&P E-mini futures, 27 points higher, and the NASDAQ E-mini futures are 70 points higher. Volatility index, the VIX, slightly elevated at 2166. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Live from coast to coast, from New York to San Francisco, Boston to Washington, D.C., nationwide on Sirius XM, the Bloomberg Business App, and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And good morning, I'm John Tucker. Let's take a moment now to look at the outlook for European banks in the new year. 2022 was a year dominated by central bank policy impacting financial services companies all across Europe and the world, and it looks like we could see more of the same in the new year. Inflation and energy dominate the debate in Europe, and both are top of mind for the CEO of SocGen. Bloomberg's Danny Berger sat down with a conversation with Fredrik Udea to discuss the outlook for SocGen and the banking industry as a whole. So let's listen in now to that conversation.
Are you concerned that as we look at the likelihood of a European recession, that this is a repeat of 2008, a repeat of Trichet, where they're going to have to hike into a recession and then quickly turn around and cut?
I'm more positive. And our central scenario is a kind of, slow economy because of the increase of interest rate, but not a recession like the one we experienced in 2009. First of all, for the starting point is pretty good. We see no deterioration of the cost of risk. The financial sector is in good shape, able to finance the economy. So yes, the central banks want to fight against inflation. It makes sense. But I think we are seeing at this stage some signs of slowdown of the pace of inflation. I'm sure that the central banks will carry on monitoring all the parameters on the economies to calibre rightly their monetary policy. What is being done is needed. But again, I don't think that we are facing the same kind of scenario. There is a lot of uncertainty. External shocks can create the problem, let's face it. But in the absence of an external shock, we are have in mind a slowdown, but which is that we can absorb.
So what sort of shock are you concerned about? What would hit the level of changing things for you to erase that optimism?
A geopolitical crisis, an evolution of the conflict in Ukraine. But just, if you wish, the way we will fare the winter and effectively with perhaps hopefully temperatures which are okay, which will mean reserves, gas reserves being preserved as much as possible, will help for the next 12 months in terms of gas prices. So there are many parameters which can play a role in the inflation. Wage evolution also. Mm. At this stage, I see also companies which are trying to avoid entering into a cycle where wages are increasing too much. So they want to preserve the future. So again, every month we will see how it goes.
What about corporate Europe? Do they have the strength to sustain, again, the wage pressure, these cost pressures, but at the same time, as we're discussing, ECB, which continues to hike, interest rates go higher, the cost of capital becomes higher. Can corporate Europe withstand that?
Overall, yes, I think so. Of course, there will be differences. Some companies will not make it, depending on their leverage, their competitive position. But so far, what I'm seeing is actually companies on one hand, which have been able to adapt, look at the evolution of the consumption of electricity or even gas. They are making progress under the pressure to reduce the usage of fossil energy. They improve their efficiency. Most of them also, I think, have been able to pass in their prices the increase of the cost of energy wages. So again, that's where it's very important in my mind to see whether we are entering a cycle of progressive normalization of inflation, and I think it should be fine. Or, unfortunately, yes, inflation stays, and then it might be more difficult because at some point the consumer will not be able to absorb the price increase. So, jury's out. The coming months will be critical, but there is a path for something which is manageable, I think.
These coming months are also going to be some of your last at SocGen. I mean, you've now seen the longest tenure of any banking chief in Europe. As you prepare for this economic environment, you've had to prepare the bank for a lot. What does preparation look like this time around as you get ready to step down from the helm?
Well, I must say my short-term agenda is precisely to ensure that I will leave the bank in good shape to my successor, Slawomir Krupa. What does that mean? Complete the job in terms of strategic project, because this project, the merger of our two French networks, the acquisition of LeasePlan, will bring benefits which are independent on the economy, on the economic outlook. We will bring the synergies, the revenues, in cost, whatever the environment is. It's a way to, of course, reinforce the business model. The second element, of course, is to ensure that we are entering this uncertain environment with the maximum of provision. We will end up 2022 with a level of ex-ante provision, in our jargon, you know, S1, S2, higher than the peak of the COVID.
Societe Generale CEO Frédéric Oudéa speaking with Bloomberg's Danny Berger on his outlook for the new year. You can catch the full conversation online at Bloomberg.com. 518 on Wall Street and still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. We check on markets and bring you the latest in business, economics, and finance. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, along with John Tucker, and equities are rising while the dollar declines amid positive sentiment from China's rollback of COVID isolation measures and the cooling of a key inflation gauge in the U.S. And we check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg, with S&P futures up about 28 points or 0.7%. Dow futures up about 0.7% or 219 points. And NASDAQ futures up 0.6% or 71 points. The DAX in Germany is up 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 3.74%. 4%. The yield on the 2-year, 4.33%. NYMEX crude oil is up about 0.9% or 68 cents at $80.24 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.7% or $11.70 at $18.15.80 an ounce. The euro 1.0661 against the dollar. British pound 1.2063. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. President Biden has approved New York's emergency declaration as the death toll from a pre-Christmas blizzard that paralyzed the Buffalo area and much of the country has risen to 28. The dead have been found in their cars, homes, and in snowbanks. Meanwhile, thousands of flights were canceled or delayed, and more are scrapped for today. South Korea sent drones across the border into North Korea. It's an unprecedented tit-for-tat military move after Kim Jong-un's regime dispatched 5 unmanned aerial vehicles into its airspace. Monday Night Football, the Chargers beat the Colts 23. 3. In the NBA, the Nets won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It is now 5:23 on Wall Street. I'm John Tucker. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. The stocks are getting a boost this morning on where the China is removing its last COVID restrictions. Let's take a deeper dive into this story this morning with Bloomberg reporter Alan Wan, who joins us this morning from Shanghai. Alan, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it. What can you tell us about what China is doing?
From January 8th, China is no longer going to require inbound visitors to quarantine at hotels anymore. I mean, basically, it's getting rid of policy that's curbed travel, hurt the economy, and left the country isolated from the rest of the world. That said, it's still going to require arrivals to show negative PCR test results taken within 48 hours of departure. But you know something? That's nothing compared to what we have right now. I mean, right now, it's like about 5 days of hotel quarantine and another 3 days at home monitoring. I myself, I've done two long quarantines after leaving China and coming back, one for 14 days and one for 10 days. And I tell you, it's pretty brutal. So I'm actually looking forward to this change in policy.
Does this mean COVID, the outbreak has gotten better in China, or the government's just throwing in the towel?
No, the COVID is not getting better. It may be peaking in Beijing. Shanghai, we're still in the midst of it. So right now, we're getting about 3,000 to 4,000 officially, 3,000 to 4,000 cases a day, which sort of flies in the face of everything we're seeing on the ground and what some of the provinces are reporting. Like, for example, Zhejiang Province, which is next to Shanghai, reported 1 million cases and expects another million more before it peaks. And what we also know is that about 18%, or almost 250 million people, have already been infected. And that's according to the China's National Health Commission. This was for the minutes of one of their meetings.
I mean, have they given any indication that they could go back to the restrictive COVID policies?
No, I think it's over. I think China has dismantled the whole apparatus. Right now, you know, I'm stunned how fast everything has occurred. Right now, there's no longer a need to get any kind of PCR test. And even if you want to get one, it's kind of hard to find. I think we've gone the other direction, which is basically, let it fly.
Yeah, well, what next at this point? I mean, they're still doing monitoring, are they not?
China is, they're trying to mitigate some of these illnesses and deaths, right? Right now, they're downgrading the management of COVID zero from highest low to the second highest, meaning that they're saying that COVID isn't as bad as people initially thought, and it's being treated now more like the flu or some kind of cold. But they're also pledging to increase ICU beds, increase the supply of life-saving equipment like ventilators, and also they're going to retrofit some of these quarantine facilities into hospitals that can handle COVID patients.
Hey, what has been the overall impact on the Chinese economy? I only get like 20 seconds left.
Okay, it's been horrendous. I mean, right this year, a lot of economists estimate growth roughly around 3%, which is like the lowest in decades. Normally, you get about 5% every year, and that's what they're predicting for next year, 5% or more. So it's been devastating for the economy. It's been devastating for a lot of businesses that have had to sort of impose these closed loops in order to conduct business. And most importantly, it's hurt consumer sentiment.
Okay. Alan, we're going to have to leave it there. Bloomberg's Alan Wan, thanks for joining us from Shanghai. Just ahead, top stories, but first, a look at the Bloomberg weather forecast.
High cloudiness will be drifting through the tri-state area for a while this morning, but eventually it moves out and we'll see sunshine develop later in the day. Temperatures will be close to 35. Tonight, generally clear skies, lows overnight 25 to 30. Tomorrow, we should be mostly sunny, highs reaching 40 to 45, partly cloudy 30 to 35 tomorrow night. Turning milder Thursday with sunshine, highs will reach 45 to 50. I'm Rob Carroll, and with your 3-day forecast on Bloomberg 1130.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And we are coming up to 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm John Tucker. We're being brought to you by your daily reminder from Innovation Refunds to apply for a payroll tax refund if your small or medium-sized business was impacted by COVID-19. Innovation Refunds clients already claimed over $2 billion in payroll tax refunds. Get started at getrefunds.com.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and stocks overseas are higher this morning. The boost in sentiment comes as China scraps more COVID rules. Now Beijing plans to end its quarantine rules early next month. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has more from Hong Kong.
This marks the end of China's 3 years of COVID isolation. People arriving in China will only need a negative COVID test within 48 hours of departure. Up until now, arrivals had to quarantine for 8 days. The government said it would handle visa applications for foreigners for everything from business and study to family reunions. And outbound tourism will also resume quickly. This could be very good for Europe and other destinations. Travel and consumer goods stocks jumped. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Brian. Stocks in China gained more than 1% overnight. That's giving a lift to U.S. futures as we close out the last trading week of the year. It's been a dismal 2022 for bulls, with the S&P 500 down more than 19%. But Credit Suisse U.S. equity strategist Jonathan Golub sees a rebound for next year.
If you do have oil lift off and then you actually get some upside in the more commodity sensitive stuff like the EMP name and the service names, the sector is going to be a really big surprise. It's absolutely our topic.
That's Jonathan Golub at Credit Suisse. He predicts the S&P 500 will close at 4050 next year.
Well, another major story we're following this morning, John, the bad weather continuing to hamper air travel across the country. We get the latest live with Bloomberg's Steve Rappaport. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Karen and John. It's a good thing Santa doesn't fly southwest. Otherwise, he may have never left the North Pole. The airline accounts for roughly 75% of cancellations nationwide yesterday. Southwest stock is down about 3% in pre-market trading. Senior Director Jim McVay explains the storm caused a ripple effect, leaving the airline to play catch-up.
As the storm continued to sweep across the country, the cancellations just compiled one after another. And as a result, we end up with flight crews and airplanes that are out of place and not in the cities that they need to be in to continue to run our operations.
McVay says Southwest is doing everything it can to right the challenges it faces. Live in New York, I'm Steve Rappaport, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Steve, thank you. The price of oil is on the rise this morning. China has taken more steps to unwind its COVID zero policy, which could increase demand. And freezing weather across the U.S. has led to refinery closures in the Texas Gulf Coast area. Checking oil right now, NYMEX crude is up 1%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, plus a check of sports. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. 5:31 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. President Biden has approved a state of emergency as a winter nightmare continues in western New York. At least 28 people have died in the Buffalo area. New York Governor Hochul.
We still have scores and scores of vehicles that were abandoned when people left during the storm.
Governor Kathy Hochul called it the blizzard of the century. Representative-elect George Santos admitted he did not tell the truth about his job experience and college education during his successful campaign for a House seat. The Long Island Republican spoke in an interview with City and State, aired on ABC 7, about questions on his campaign website that he was Jewish.
I always joke, I'm Catholic, but I'm also Jew-ish, as in ish. And I've made that joke because growing up, I grew up fully aware that my grandparents were Jewish, came from a Jewish family, and they were refugees to Brazil. And that was always the story I grew up with, and I've always known it very well.
Santos says he campaigned talking about the people's concerns, not his resume. The Biden administration is calling out the governor of Texas, saying it was a cruel and dangerous stunt A busload of migrants arrived in Washington, D.C. on Christmas Eve in 16-degree weather without warning at the official residence of Vice President Kamala Harris. Ukraine's foreign minister is calling for a peace summit at the U.N. to end the war. Dmytro Kuleba, speaking to the Associated Press, says the summit should be with the U.N. Secretary General as mediator.
We think that the United Nations could be the best venue for holding this summit, because this is not about making a favor to a certain country. This is really about bringing everyone on board.
Foreign Minister Kuleba. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. It's now 5:34 on Wall Street. Time for the Sports Report, being brought to you by Tri-State Audi. And good morning once again to John Stashower.
Good morning, John. Earlier this season, the Nets were a mess. Started 1-5, 9-11. They fired the coach. There was the whole Kyrie Irving saga. But the Nets just won at Cleveland, 125-117. Both Kyrie and Kevin Durant scored 32 points. They combined to make 12 of 19 three-pointers. The Nets have won 9 in a row, 13 of 14. Their coach, Jacques Vaughn.
We came back as a group. We kind of pledged to each other that it was going to be about basketball and hopefully not let anything interfere, any outside noise interfere with that. And our guys have done an unbelievable job of protecting each other and making this thing about basketball.
Nets play tomorrow in Atlanta. Knicks are in Dallas tonight. Monday Night Football, Chargers beat the Colts 20-3. LA's in the playoffs. One spot left in the AFC with slumping Miami leading the Jets, Patriots, and Steelers by one game. The Dolphins visit the Pats Sunday. Miami QB Tua Tagovailoa is back in concussion protocol. The Jets Sunday visit Seattle. Mike White returns as starting QB. His injured ribs having healed. That's also a big game for the Seahawks. We're trying to make the NFC playoffs, as are the Giants. They are in with a home win Sunday over Indianapolis. Nathaniel Hackett, unable to complete his first season as coach in Denver, fired with the Broncos 4-11. The holdup in the Carlos Correa contract is an injured ankle that dates back to 2014. The Mets are said to be trying to restructure the deal, make it not all guaranteed. The feeling is Correa will still become a Met. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right. Thanks a lot, John. Right now, Dow futures up 228 points. S&P futures up 28. The NASDAQ futures 72 points higher. This is Bloomberg. The Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information. It is now 5:36 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. Here with that is Gina Cervetti.
The former Wellington Hotel is reportedly changing hands. The New York Post reports that Extel is paying more than $94 million to buy the leasehold of the former Wellington from BD Hotels, and that plans might include a significantly larger building for the site at 7th Avenue and West 55th in Manhattan. Lionsgate's new $194 million production studio for Newark could be in line for as much as $100 million in state subsidies. That's what the Asbury Park Press is reporting, saying the incentives are part of a development deal approved last week. It's New Jersey's second major movie and TV production project getting the green light this year, following Netflix, which plans to build a new studio at the former site of Fort Monmouth. And New Jersey-based Harbor Freight Tools already has more than 1,300 locations around the country. Now it's expanding further in its home state. NJ.com reports the family-owned hardware chain will open a new store in Deptford, bringing its New Jersey store count to almost 30 locations. That's the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Gina Cervetti.
All right, thanks, Gina. 5:37 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Green Report. And with that, here's Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The days of so-called forever chemicals, or PFAS, are numbered at 3M. The big conglomerate is dealing with regulatory pressure and lawsuits over the substances. It announced last week that it will stop making the chemicals and discontinue their use in products by the end of 2025. The move by 3M marks a historic break with an entire class of chemicals that were first created in researching the atomic bomb during World War II. They helped 3M develop hundreds of different products over more than 70 years. Now, things such as Scotchgard, firefighting foam, and other products are potentially potential liabilities for the company. 3M CEO Mike Roman acknowledges increased customer unease over PFAS and says the company does not see a viable business in the future. He says the decision will allow 3M to move into other, higher growth opportunities. He says it is too early to discuss whether plants that manufacture PFAS will be repurposed. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, thanks a lot, Jeff. And we have Green on the screen ahead of the cash open on this Tuesday morning. Dow futures right now up 225 points. That's a rise of about 0.7% this morning. And the S&P E-mini futures 28 points higher. That's up 0.7%. The NASDAQ futures right now 71 points higher. That is up 0.6%. And stay with us. Just ahead, we'll get a preview of the trading day ahead with Sam Stovall, the chief investment strategist at CFRA. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. stock index futures on the rise this morning amid optimism that China's reopening will boost global growth next year, providing support for markets. And we check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 28 points or 0.7%. Dow futures up about 0.7% or 224 points. And NASDAQ futures up 0.6% or 68 points. The DAX in Germany is up 0.7%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd. Yield 3.74%. The yield on the 2-year 4.33%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.1% of 86 cents at $80.42 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.7% or $12 at 18.16 an ounce. The euro 1.0663 against the dollar. British pound 1.2062. The yen is at 133.32. And Bitcoin this morning is up 0.1%. It's at $16,856. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. The death toll from a pre-Christmas blizzard that paralyzed the Buffalo area and much of the country has risen to 28 in western New York. The dead have been found in their cars, homes, and in snowbanks. Meanwhile, President Biden approved an emergency declaration for western New York. The Biden administration criticized Beijing's military drills near Taiwan this week as provocative. It insists it will continue helping the government in Taipei defend itself. Monday Night Football, the Chargers beat the Colts 20-3. In the NBA, the Nets won. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Well, the S&P 500 is on track for its worst annual performance since 2008. It's the last trading week of the year. Futures right now are climbing. And let's get you set up for the trading day ahead now with Sam Stovall, the Chief Investment Strategist at CFRA. Honored to have you, Sam. Good morning.
Good morning, John.
With history as our guide, is Santa Rally still on the cards?
Sure. The Santa Rally has come into existence 77% of all years since World War II, causing the S&P to go up by about 1.3%. So I would tend to say that based on Friday's action, based on today's futures, that we have a very good chance of a Santa Claus rally.
Where do you suppose we're going to end the year in terms of percentage gains, or I should say percentage losses for the broader index?
Well, it's still going to be one of the 10 negative years going back to 1990. I look to 1990 because that's when S&P started computing its sector-level indices. So it'll end up being most likely the third worst year behind 2002 and 2008. And interesting, this is the only year since 2002 in which we had one sector that was positive and everybody else negative.
What sector was that?
Well, that was real estate back in 2002, up 4.1%. Very different from energy, up more than 50% so far this year, with every other sector in the red. And if there's a positive that can be taken from this, is that the S&P was up nearly 29% in 2003.
Does negative sentiment change simply because we turn the calendar to a new year?
Well, I think you do get some return to a more positive sentiment, because in a negative year, you're going to have a lot of tax loss selling. And so if you continue to see a lot of red, then I think that adds to the dampening effect of market performances, which then adversely affects his confidence. So I would tend to say that, you know, if we start 2023 on an up note, then I would tend to think that that could help to buoy the sentiment.
Will earnings be better than feared?
Well, good question. I think the number is the S&P has, in the last 52 out of 53 quarters, has posted actual returns that exceeded end-of-quarter estimates. Only difference this time is that we are looking for an earnings recession, because the fourth quarter of 2022, as well as the first two quarters of 2023, are expected to post year-on-year declines. And historically, looking at operating earnings, they have been coincident with the start of recessions, whereas with GAAP earnings, they've been a bit of a lag.
So an earnings recession, can you still have a positive year?
Yes, actually, a lot of studies have shown that when earnings zag, the market tends to zig, the reason being that investors are forward-looking, and they are looking across the valley. Expectations are we could see earnings up by 10.3% in the fourth quarter of 2023, and then up by more than 10% for all of 2024. So I think there is a good possibility that once we get past the undulations of the first half, that we do end up with a positive 2023.
Can you further break down some of the sectors and the expected performance that you're looking for?
Well, looking for pretty good earnings growth for the consumer discretionary category. One of the areas in which we're expecting to see double-digit gains, whereas energy, not surprisingly, is expected to post double-digit losses, or I should say really year-on-year declines. They're still going to post earnings, but the percentage change year-on-year is expected to be down, primarily because they're up by about 160% in 2022. So really sort of a hodgepodge of where the earnings growth is likely to be seen.
And we all know the mess that we saw with tech this year. Have the moats around some of those stronger tech names, have they been removed?
Well, maybe not removed, but certainly drained a little bit. I think it's more a question of the enthusiasm, not necessarily the moat that has been drained. A lot of these companies still are very strong in what they do. The question is, how much are investors willing to pay for them? I mean, this wasn't like 2000, in which investors thought that trading at 60 times forward earnings was still attractive. I mean, we're looking at technology, which is trading in the mid to low 20 multiple area now. So in 2023, tech is expected to post only about a 3% earnings increase versus a similar number for the S&P 500. It's, as I mentioned before, discretionary, financials, and industrials that are expected to post double-digit advances.
Hey, Sam, for your perspective, was 2022 sort of the poster child for active management?
Well, poster child, maybe in a negative way. If you go to SPDJI.com, that's the S&P Dow Jones Indices, you'll see their SPIVA report, S&P index versus active, and find that the indexes consistently outperform the active managers, certainly on a large cap basis, but also mid and small cap as well. So it's certainly been a very challenging period for the active managers.
And just about the minute left, I want you to put your economist hat on. Among the data this week, initial jobless claims Thursday, waiting for the Fed. Are they going to have to torpedo the jobs market until we can signal all clear for risk assets?
Well, I think we're going to see the S&P Case-Shiller index come in lower than last time. I think that we are going to be looking at jobless claims come up a bit more. I think the Fed is going to be looking at two prongs, primarily looking at the PCE core, the personal consumption expenditure, ex food and energy, because that's their primary read on inflation, and at the same time hoping that they don't do too much damage to the employment picture at the same time. So their focus is inflation, but they hope there's not a lot of collateral damage.
Where does 2023 S&P 500 end?
45,
put you on the spot here.
45. Yeah, 45.75 is our estimate. This is based on CFRA analysts' target price differentials and some technical considerations.
Okay.
Tough first half and a better second half.
Sam, always a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us this Tuesday morning. Sam Stovall, the Chief Investment Strategist at CFRA. And right now, ahead of the market open, Dow futures up 220. S&P 500 futures right now up 26. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, along with John Tucker, and futures are higher this morning. We check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg, with S&P futures up about 27 points or 0.7%. Dow futures up about 0.7% or 224 points. And NASDAQ futures up 0.6% or 62 points. 10-year Treasury up 1/32, yield 3.74%, and a yield on the 2-year, 4.33%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.9% or 70 cents at $80.25 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.7% or $12.30 at $18.16.50 an ounce. The euro 1.0664 against the dollar. The yen 133.30. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. John.
All right, Karen, thanks a lot. 5:56 on Wall Street. Time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. Today we're looking at the Supreme Court. When justices return to the bench in January, they're going to hear a case involving a Turkish bank owned and controlled by the Turkish government that may be precedent-setting. Turkey's Halk Bank is asking the justices to dismiss criminal charges against it, stemming from an alleged scheme to help Iran evade economic sanctions by diverting billions of dollars in oil and gas revenue. And for more on the case, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Harold Krant, a professor at the Chicago Kent College of Law.
Hal, explain why this case could be precedent-setting.
So the Turkish bank evidently helped launder somewhere close to $20 billion of Iranian oil assets in contravention of our laws against doing business with Iran. And so criminal charges were brought against the bank here in the United States because some of the laundering took place within the U.S. financial system. There has never been a criminal action brought against a foreign state-owned enterprise in our history. And this was really the first one. And the Second Circuit held that there's no law immunizing a state-owned bank for its commercial activities the way there would be to protect a state diplomat. And so the criminal charges could go forward. So this is really unprecedented, and it's a major change which would have a ripple effect around the world, because usually we treat foreign governments, whether they're doing commercial activities or not, in a very special way. We have a whole statute, the Federal Sovereign Immunities Act, which limits when you can even sue state-owned enterprises. But this would be saying that, well, Congress didn't say you can't have a criminal action against a state-owned enterprise, and so now we have the first one. And we'll see if the Supreme Court lets it stand. My guess is that it will, but who knows?
What's Turkey's argument for why the bank shouldn't be prosecuted?
First of all, it's unprecedented that there has never been this kind of action. And they're extrapolating from the diplomatic precedents, which suggest that there is diplomatic immunity for its officers. And Congress has seen fit that we cannot prosecute diplomats for ordinary crimes. And so they're suggesting that the danger would be that a state-owned enterprise, you basically end up limiting the kind of functional immunity that's given to leading members of different countries who may be directors on the bank, or maybe their relatives are working in the bank. And so this would chip away at that kind of immunity.
Why do you think the Supreme Court is going to allow the prosecution to go forward?
Congress didn't preclude it. And in the absence of congressional statute, the court would have to rely upon some other kind of analogy, such as diplomatic immunity, to stop the prosecution. And to stop the prosecution of a bank for its commercial activities seems a pretty far stretch from stopping a prosecution from a diplomat who's been accused of a hit and run or some other criminal offense.
And that's Harold Krent, a professor at the Chicago Kent College of Law, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcasts. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg Terminal at BLawGo. S&P futures 26 points higher, and the Dow futures up 220. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.